listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Out of Vegas with the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
Straight out of Vegas here, Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, RJ Bell, Steve Fezzik, Brad Powers here. You can always listen to the show on the iHeartRadio app. We've got all sorts of fun stuff on the NBA playoffs. We've got some college football we're going to sprinkle in. I'm Jonas Knox, the voice of the fan. He's RJ Bell, the voice of Vegas.
Hey, Jonas, how are you guys doing? I'm recovering, but not all the way back. So I'm going to sit back and just hit you with pearls of wisdom.
I mean, that's perfect. That's how it's done here. Steve Fezzik's been doing it. He did it yesterday. He's got a ton in store for today. So all sorts of fun stuff here, guys. And we're going to start with the NBA playoffs. And we're going to start with what happened last night in Denver. It was the Portland Trail Blazers evening up their series with the Denver Nuggets at one game apiece, a 97-90 win for Portland. What did last night's development tell us about this series moving forward?
Well, I think it's all about the Denver Nuggets. This is a banged-up team, and I got to give RJ some accolade here. He warned us after that epic seven-game series against the Spurs. Watch out for Denver and their energy level. Remember, Portland only had to go five games. Denver had to go seven games. And although it didn't show up in game one, I really think the legs for both teams showed up in game two here. We saw a Denver team that basically could not make their open shots. And frankly, we saw a very banged up Denver team. Their point guard, Murray, limping around, aggravated a right thigh injury. And he literally said, I could not move. Coach had to take me out for some of the time during the game. Denver, all their players, banged up from that seven game series.
So then why didn't it show up in game one? If that was fresh off the heels of that the long series and you had Portland coming off extended rest, why didn't it show up in game one? Was that just the altitude?
You know, my thought is it's almost like when you stay up all night and you know you got that meeting at 10 a.m. Not that I've ever done this, but I've heard rumors. You get through that meeting and then you take a breath and then you're dead tired. And my thought was Denver, very cognizant that this is a flat spot game one. So they put all the energy to prevent that. But then game two, you can't just keep that energy level up. So watching the game, it seems like they were more tired in game two.
Oh, absolutely. Even on their jump shots. And I got to tell you, RJ, it's not like Denver didn't get good shots. Their game plan was good. They fed it into Jokic. And Portland said, you know, we're not going to let this guy beat us again and get 40 points. So Jokic made the right reads. He passed it to his teammates. And all the guards for Denver just kept missing threes all night long.
Yeah, the shots weren't there. And that really looked like tired legs for Denver. In fact, Denver's played 91 games this season. The 82 games in the regular season, 9 postseason games so far. Denver last night shot less than 35% from the field. First time this entire season that's been the case, RJ.
So 82 regular season games, all the playoff games.
All the playoff games. Every game, that was their worst shooting percentage.
Looking at this series moving forward, I think it's advantage Denver. Just because I do believe Denver proved some things in the first series. I mean, winning a playoff series was a step for this team. Winning a game seven, coming back in game two and four of the last series, where if they had lost either of those games, they're probably out of it. Overcoming Popovich and all the experience. It feels like battle-tested Denver. And Portland, you could say, it was so personal with Westbrook. And let's be honest, Lillard, it's a coming out party. Let's give him credit. One of the best players in the NBA. And if they had their big guy, I'd like Portland. But it just feels like over a seven-game series, what Djokovic is going to do in the post or be able to do is the one constant, I would say, we have in the series.
I agree with all that, but I'm going to caveat it. Denver needs their point guard, Murray, and he was hobbling around really badly last night, and he did not sound optimistic when they interviewed him about him getting better anytime soon, so that could be the wild card, and that the bettors are reacting, I think, to Murray being hobbled, and they have made Portland now the significant favorite in the series. And RJ, this is almost unprecedented to me, that going into the series, Denver was a pretty big favorite to win this series, like around minus 150, and now Portland, despite only winning one of two games, is now, I believe, a minus 145 favorite.
Yeah, it's in that 150 range both ways. So Denver, before game one, minus 150 with home court. Now Blazers minus 150. Anytime the team split, it is advantage road team, but not by this much.
No, you never see almost a 100-cent move. I mean, that is almost unprecedented.
So I do think, Jonas, that that is an objective takeaway Vegas perspective-wise, is the Vegas market is much higher on the Blazers than they were entering the series, even though the first two were split out.
Well, the other series going on in the Western Conference is the Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. Obviously, Golden State up 2-0 in that one. But the big question we have is, can anybody in the NBA beat Golden State?
Well, I think everyone's a big underdog. I mean, let me ask you this, Fez. Houston entering this series, let's not benefit from hindsight, because, correct me if I'm wrong, Houston's covered both these games, right?
Just one of them. They did not get the cover game two. A last-second foul. Houston was catching five game two, RJ. They were trailing by four with 3 seconds to play. They lost by six.
Okay, so literally a second away from covering both games.
Exactly.
And they split out, meaning that it's not as if Houston's really underperformed in any drastic way. If anything, if you look at the ATS margin, they've overperformed, right? Because they, by a smidge, but let's just say they've lived up to expectations, but they lost both games. And I think there's going to be a total reevaluation about, oh, how good are the Rockets? I mean, right now it's minus 670, so almost $7 to win a dollar if you want to bet the Warriors to finish this series out. It started minus 250, obviously a big difference off those two wins. My question is, how much, who do you think in the East would give the best series to Golden State?
I think either Milwaukee or Toronto. I think both have excellent chances to give Golden State real problems, RJ. They're my two highest rated teams in the East, and either one of those teams would have home court advantage against Golden State in the NBA Finals.
Brad, do you take that personally that your Celtics who have split out in Milwaukee but somehow aren't even in the conversation?
Well, Golden State would have the home court advantage over Boston, so I'll have to give that one to Fez. That would be a major feather in the cap for Golden State. But I think player-wise, I would think head coaching-wise, I'll stick with my Boston Celtics. And when you weren't here, RJ, I doubled down, kept doubling down on the Celtics. So I'm plenty confident that Boston still has a good chance to come out of the East.
So my point being, Jonas asked the question, who beats Golden State? I mean, let's say that let's use the Bucks just because they're the number one seed. If the Bucks are hosting the Warriors in the finals, and that presupposes now Milwaukee winning two more series, which means this is a maturing team, right? A team that's getting confidence they can do it in the playoffs. What's the series price?
You know, I think Golden State would only be minus 200. Now, I get it. They're minus 200 right now versus the field.
But they have home court, too, though. Well, they're they opened up minus 250 against Houston with home court.
Yes, yes. So I think that Golden State would be minus 200. What's remarkable, like, in terms of, do you want to bet Golden State to win the title? I don't think there's any reason to bet Golden State right now. They're minus 200 versus the field. I think you can wait till the NBA Finals, and I still think you're going to get Golden State minus 200.
I got to tell you, Jonas, I think the people who are holding out hope with Houston saying, you know, a series really doesn't start until the road team wins, right? You've heard that before.
Right.
And the theory being, hey, worst case, you get to game seven. It's one game, right? Because if you just hold, if you don't lose at home, if you're Houston, you're getting to a game seven. And who knows what happens. But I think that Houston had their two best chances in game one and two. If you look at game one, it was what, less than a 48-hour turnaround for with travel?
Yep.
It was a Friday night game in L.A., correct?
Yep.
Correct.
And then they had a Sunday afternoon game.
A 12:30 start Pacific time.
So significantly less than 48 hours.
And think about this. It's Friday. Golden State is in L.A. Houston is in the Bay. They've already flown in. Advantage, big advantage,
big
road
advantage.
Team.
They lose that game. Then, and we talked about it, Kerr wanted to get the dagger in the heart early. He went with the small lineup, the Hamptons five, early in this series, which he usually doesn't. Playing his guys 7, 8, 10 minutes more than he did during the regular season, his core small lineup guys. You think, well, where's the problem going to be? It's when there's a one-day turnaround, only one day off. Sunday game, Monday off, play on Tuesday. The fact that they lost that game, Houston, even though Golden State played their guys many, many more minutes than usual, and it was short, we'll put in quote, short rest. It wasn't back-to-back, but the shortest you get in the playoffs. Now, Wednesday off, Thursday off, Friday off, play on Saturday.
Saturday night.
How in the heck is fatigue going to be an issue? Now, obviously, and we'll talk about it, Houston has the game three at home. Everything's on the line. All-in type effort coming up. But other than that, man, if I had to predict from here, I'd say Houston squeaks out game three, Golden State wins game four would be my prediction.
I think that that's a very sage prediction, and then Golden State in five close it back out at home. Right, RJ?
But again, that's the thing about Golden State. Once they get comfortable, you never know. I could see Golden State losing that one.
Especially at home. Boy, how do they lose twice to the Clippers at home?
Now, let me ask you this last question. When or what is the current number in game three that you're seeing?
I saw Houston, the latest number, -3.5. It was as high as -4, a little Golden State money today.
So what we're saying is, considering the zigzag and max motivation, this is almost even teams. Because home court for Houston is 4.
Yes.
Line is 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying just Golden State is just a smidge better, which presupposes Houston having the motivational edge.
All in game. Yep.
All right. When we come back, what do you think we should cover, Jonas?
Well, there's a conspiracy theory out there. A conspiracy theory from a friend of yours that he dropped on the Western Conference playoffs.
I'm guessing that's someone Jonas doesn't like. Initial CC.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox. This is the pregame show you've always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm RJ Bell. We are Straight Outta Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of you, the fan. Coming up here in just a couple of moments, we have a conspiracy theory in the Western Conference of the NBA playoffs.
Each weekday, we have fun bringing the fun of Vegas straight to you right now on the Strip. 82 degrees. The neon is pumping.
Guys, we've been talking about the Warriors and the Rockets series. Golden State up 2-0 in that series with Game 3 coming up this weekend. And earlier today on Fox Sports Radio, friend of RJ Bell, friend of the program, sometimes foe, depending on how Steve Fezzik's mood is, RJ, Colin Cowherd had this to say about Game 3 of the Rockets and Warriors.
What networks do for the NBA, you promise advertisers 6 games. So if it goes 7 as a network, you're above expectations. If it goes below that, you're in trouble. A sweep? A couple years ago, ESPN had 3 sweeps, I think, in like the East or the West. It's a disaster for networks. You can lose $100 million in 3 weeks. So, and I'm not a conspiracy guy, but if Golden State won that thing Saturday, the West is over.
All right. So let's agree with the following. One, Jonas presented that very incorrectly. He's somehow trying to defer to Fez. Fez loves Colin. It's almost hero worship. It's Jonas.
Yeah, right.
With the problem. Bye. But moving on. I think Colin's kind of contradicting his point. He's saying, boy, the NBA doesn't want there to be sweeps. Oh, by the way, last year there were three of them.
Yeah, there's so many of these sweeps, so they've got to avoid them.
So I agree, though, that the best the NBA can do is try to skew, load the dice, let's say. There's still going to be randomness. There's still the chance of the sweeps. But they load the dice. That's what I believe. Fez, I think you go beyond that. You're more of a skeptic, a cynic, a conspiracy guy. Let me tell you how I believe the NBA attempts to influence game, you know, extended series. Here's my understanding, and our producer Lee gave me this information, which affirmed some stuff that I had read in the past, and this was a day or two ago. The first four games of any NBA series, the refs are predetermined, though they're not made public until the morning of the game. So whoever is refereeing game three in Houston, I mean, I guess in theory you could be tracking the possible refs, seeing what airlines they're on and find out, but it's not publicly announced until the day of the game. But if you have the four, game one, two, three, and four already set, you don't quite know what kind of ref you'd want to extend the series. Now we know a Houston favorable ref. Now, what does that even mean, a Houston favorable ref? I think it's two main things. One, what type of calls do you benefit from? And this isn't always obvious, but with Harden, with the Rockets, it's very obvious, right? Is whoever's going to call fouls in favor of Harden with his, you know, outstretched scissor kicks and his various other gymnastic type moves, that it wouldn't be too hard to profile these refs and say who's making these calls, who's not. And if we want Houston to win, let's get one of the ones making the calls in. Also, we know who the home team is. And some refs are susceptible to the home crowd and some are not. What does that mean? Late in the game, crowd's going wild. There's a foul call. You hear the crowd. Maybe you hate the idea of that crowd booing you. And subconsciously, you favor the home team. And that's one of the things that bettors look at, is what percentage of the time does the home team win with this referee? Because over hundreds of games, you're going to see there's a home or bias. Not that they like the home team. It's they're influenced by the crowd. So, Faz, do you agree generally the way the game is going to be called can be pro or con a certain type of team?
I do agree. But, of course, as you mentioned, this only comes into play games 5, 6, and 7, right, when the league gets to pick the refs.
Well, that's the theory, is you don't know that Houston wouldn't been up 2-0 here. Now, you can kind of suppose the home team kind of needs to win game 3 and preload it that way. And I wouldn't be surprised, right? Because the only time really the home team winning game 3 would be problematic is if they're up 2-0. And that is so rare,
yep,
that the home team or the road team is going to win the first and second game, right? So, Fez, you go for, well, let's think about game 5, 6, and 7. So now if it's 3-1 going into game 5, and the NBA gets to decide which card to deal, they're going to deal the card that benefits Houston in this case if they're down 3-1, and probably a pro-Harden ref that's not influenced by the home team, home crowd, because it's going to be in Golden State. And I think you see in game 5 and 6, those refs get dealt out. But really, it's hard to say there's any real corruption there, because you're putting the ref in a spot. You might have an inclination. You might be predicting which way the ref's going to go, but the ref's going to call a fair game.
Like he's called all year long.
Exactly. It's just his propensity. Fez, you actually go a step further. And I mean, I'm not going to say it's crazy, but it's kind of extreme.
I'm just hoping to avoid the bananas song here, RJ. So, I'm a referee. I'm a seasoned professional. I'm going to make the right calls. I'm driving to the arena. I know I'm looking to make the right calls. But in the back of my mind...
You notice the way he said but real softly.
In but. My subconscious, I know...
Oh, so now, this is something they don't even know they're doing. But you know they're doing it.
The wow, league,
that's magic.
The league needs the Rockets to win game three. So what am I thinking to myself? Whatever I do, do not make the error of making a horrible call that goes against the Rockets, that gives Golden State the game, and then they can show me on SportsCenter screwing up, giving Golden State the 3-0 lead because of a bad call I make. That is an event that cannot happen. And so in the back of my mind as a ref, I'm avoiding that type one type of mistake at all costs.
But that's the thing. These calls are made instantly. There's not like a deliberation. This isn't like a replay. It's not, I mean, what you're kind of saying is you don't want to call the refs what this would truly be, which is a type of true game fixing, a type of corruption. If you're making a call that you don't think is the right call for some other reason, that is the definition of a game being corrupt or fixed. You're saying, well, in the back of my mind, I'm going to establish like some kind of hypnotic suggestion. I don't want to call for Golden State if it's close. And then, but then somehow act like that's calling the game fairly?
Chris Paul shows me up. He curses me out. And I would tee him up any other time during the regular season. And I'm about to hit him with the tee. And you know what, RJ? Rightly or wrongly, as a ref, you know what? I probably wouldn't hit him with the tee there.
And to me, I very much doubt that level of corruption exists because, quite frankly, now there is another level, which would be the league suggesting this to the refs. I think we are almost certain with the billions and billions at stake, that's not going on. The idea that some rogue ref is going to take it upon himself to influence the game to benefit the league, I think the ref has more risk to himself by making bad calls than he does calling the game fairly and then the league saying, well, why didn't you call for Golden State? The very act of them being critical of him would be a huge controversy. Imagine if a ref called the game fairly and after Commissioner Silver said, why'd you make that call to benefit Golden State? You should have known we didn't want Golden State to win. That's never going to happen.
Never going to happen.
So my thought is, Collins' general thought that the millions at stake probably are influential in extending the series, I agree with. Number two, I think the only way to get at that is with the referees and not so much or not in any way them trying to fix the game, but rather put the right ref in the right spot to get the outcome the league wants. But Jonas, I don't think you can do that until game five. So my thought is game three, I don't see the refs being any factor when it comes to the Golden State-Houston game. What's your thoughts?
I wish it was true. I don't think that it's true, but I wish there was that sort of in-depth conspiracy.
What would the mechanics be?
I don't know. Like, Fez's idea that in their subconscious, almost like they're being abducted by aliens and they're being something's being put in their brain as they go to the arena. I hope something like that is true. I really do, because I think it would make much more interesting conversation. But I don't think with all the eyeballs on NBA games now and seeing how calls that are missed naturally are criticized, I don't know that anybody's got the guts to go over the top and just intentionally cause a game to go one way or the other with a call.
I agree with you. Now, I do think it's very interesting, and we'll probably close with this. That if you want, I always believe that one story can tell you about a man, his nature, his inner truth, or a lady. The fact that Fez believes that he understands a ref's motivation better than they understand their own motivation is probably the canonical story, the core story about Fez and his beliefs. Would you agree with that, Fez?
I'll agree.
I mean, it takes a special man that believes he knows more about another man than that man knows about himself. But that's you. Would you agree? Do you admit to that?
Oh, absolutely.
In all the five boroughs, I'm known. I'm known all over the f-ing world.
That's Steve Fezzik. I'm RJ Bell. In just 1 minute, the odds in the East, who's going to win in the East? Both of the series are 1-1, but the odds are extremely favorable to two of the teams.
That's coming up next, but for all the latest from around the world of sports, here's Dan Byer.
Some news from the Eastern Conference. Bucks guard Malcolm Brogdon listed as out for Friday's Game 3 against the Celtics as he remains out with a foot injury, while Celtics GM Danny Ainge is expected to make a full recovery after suffering a mild heart attack in Milwaukee on Tuesday. Raptors-Sixers tonight, Game 3, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. In the Western Conference, the Rockets and Warriors will play in Houston on Saturday night. Warriors guard Steph Curry practiced fully today despite dislocating his finger in Tuesday's Game 2 win over Houston. Rockets guard James Harden says his vision a little better today after he was poked in the eye in that Game 2. Says it's still tough to see, especially with bright lights, but he'll play in Saturday's Game 3. One other NBA note to pass along, Brooklyn Nets all-star guard D'Angelo Russell was cited for marijuana possession at LaGuardia Airport in New York after TSA officials found the drug hidden in an Arizona iced tea can in his checked baggage. In baseball, Noah Syndergaard of the Mets struck out 10 through a complete game shutout and also hit a solo home run in a 1-0 win against the Reds. Twins pitcher Jose Berrios picked up his fifth win of the season. Minnesota dropped the Astros 8-2. Rockies over the Brewers 11-6, while the Padres downed the Braves 11-2, and the Rays were 3-1 victors against the Royals. PGA Tour action. They're in Charlotte this week. Rory McIlroy has the first round lead at the Wells Fargo Championship. He is at 5 under par. Back to you guys.
Thanks, Dan. Straight out of Vegas here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up in about 15 minutes from now here on FSR, we will have best bets as we take a look ahead at one game in the NBA playoffs later on tonight. I'm Jonas Knox, the voice of you, the fan. He's the voice of Vegas, RJ Bell.
Yeah, I was down at the MGM for some press on the Canelo fight. Tomorrow, we got a couple of special things. One, a super segment of horse racing with a bunch of free picks for the Derby. Number two, actually with Adam Carolla, got a chance to interview Sugar Ray Leonard and Oscar De La Hoya. We'll have a little bit of sound from those interviews tomorrow as we preview the fight. It's competitive. Alvarez is Canelo in the minus 400 range in that big fight. Let me ask you this, Jonas. Wouldn't you say that if you're a Celtics fan, you're pretty happy with 1-1? And if you're a Sixers fan, you're pretty happy with 1-1?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
I mean, only thing better is 2-0.
Yep.
But somehow, if you look at these East odds, Brad, why don't you read these out? It really acts as if there's such a disparity between the haves and the have-nots in the East. I just don't see it.
Yeah, so right now the favorite, Milwaukee, to win the East, even money. Bet a dollar, win a dollar if you're betting on Milwaukee to win the East. Next up, the Raptors, 2-1. $1 wins you $2 on the Raptors. And then, RJ, you mentioned it, Boston and Philly clearly behind. The Celtics now 5-1 to win the East. Philadelphia, 7-1.
So, Fez, I've heard people talk about the Sixers, that they're finally coming together, that all of these issues, you know, again, Embiid's health is a question mark. Can you really tell me that if Milwaukee wins, 100 wins 100, and if the Sixers win the East, 100 wins 700, it's 7 times the payout? Does that make sense that there's such a difference?
It doesn't feel right at all. And remember, just let's go back 2.5, 3 months ago. All four of these teams were all priced at just a little under 3-1. They were all comparably priced equally. And we're having a great debate, who's going to win the East? And have things really changed all that much? Now, I get it. Embiid, he's banged up. He's got the knee tendonitis.
So, and let's use Boston. Wouldn't we say Boston's playing as well now as they have any point during the season?
Oh, absolutely. They got a sweep in the first round. They got a split at Milwaukee. So they're 5-1 in the playoffs. And what, the Sixers now are 5-2 in the playoffs. So you could make the case both these teams are exceeding playoff expectations, and they're being kicked to the curb like they're big long shots, like Houston long shots against Golden State. Those numbers, I got to be honest, RJ, I got Milwaukee to win the East, but I am shocked that there's such a disparity in these numbers currently.
Yeah, it seems to me the Boston at 5-1 offers particular value because I think if they win one more series, though Toronto will have home court, if I'm not mistaken,
yep,
there's still going to be a sense of, here we are. We've overcome our adversity early in the year, and here we are. Because if you look on paper, I mean, Boston's the best team. Entering the season, Boston was the favorite in the East.
Yeah, Boston was supposed to win 59 games. That was their season win number, which was higher than every other team. And Boston was the one team, RJ, that everyone discussed, oh, they're going to have a higher gear and play better in the playoffs.
So I get the skepticism because you really had to wonder about Kyrie integration with the team. But it feels like they've achieved it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Smart going out, their really good perimeter guard, has actually, I think, helped their offense. There's only one basketball, so it's given more play-in time to Gordon Hayward, to scary Terry Rozier, and I think Boston's offense, let's face it, Irving had a terrible game two. I don't think that's going to happen the rest of the series.
That's Steve Fezzik. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. Jonas, a lot of football talk, and with the NCAA in these injury reports, I think this is mighty interesting.
Yeah, college football is being talked about, most notably by our Brad Powers, who is the college football expert out there. And Brad was a little hot and bothered by some of these injury report stories that were coming out and how some people are trying to use that in order to gain a little bit of an advantage. Brad Powers, what has got you so angered when it comes to college football?
Well, first, this was reported by CBS yesterday. The NCAA Gambling Working Group, never heard of it before, but I'm sure there's so many subcommittees in the NCAA, who knows. But they're proposing the first ever, and this is going to be a standardized, basically, injury report for all the college football teams. There's never been one in college football, unlike the NFL, and obviously it's because of a lack of transparency. I got to tell you, I don't like this. I like diving into the newspapers or reading or watching the press conferences for the coaches on a weekly basis, and usually I can get a pretty good idea of who's going to play and who isn't. I don't want these standardized injury reports. That I lose my edge in that case if everyone has the same information just by going to the simple report or if there's a website out there. I'm kind of pissed by this. I'll be perfectly frank.
I read 9 newspapers a day.
Well, listen, we just learned about Fezzik. And he believes he understands the soul of a man better than the man understands his own soul. Well, Brad cares more about his pocketbook than the collective welfare of the betting public. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes.
And at least you're not trying to deny it. And that's really what this is about. When there is not standardized release of information, like there is, quite frankly, in NFL, there's going to be some people with, I mean, you could call it inside information. I'm not sure exactly the right word for it. Maybe inside info is the right word.
He had to know everything, this guy. He'd find out the kind of inside stuff nobody else knew, and that's what he put his money on.
And that's something where, and we've seen this before, and Jonas, being the voice of the fan, this is really an eye popper. College football, 7-point favorite, home team. All of a sudden, dogs getting bet. Down, goes to 3.5. 3 hours later, you hear the quarterback for the favorites out.
Yep.
That happens, what, 4 or 5 times a season?
It does, yep.
Literally, you can look at this, the odds move and see here's when the syndicate group found out or decided to move on it. It moves, and a couple hours later, it's announced. That looks horrible. It really, and I get you want to be in on that. You want to be cashing your ticket. But let's think bigger. Let's think about this as an industry. So let's agree. Maybe this hurts Brad Powers' pocketbook. in the short term with your little squinty myopic view. Yeah. But in the long term, the industry grows.
Yes.
When people feel like they're not getting took.
Yes.
Because I got to be honest, if you're not reading 9 newspapers a day and you bet that team an hour before, you know, laying 7 instead of 3.5, you're not too happy.
No, you're not.
So to me, I get Brad's selfishness, self-interest, but I think for an industry, the more information that we have out there, the less it feels like this is a fixed kind of thing, the better.
So this is more to accommodate more betting, so people aren't so afraid to get involved because they don't want to feel like
same thing with daily fantasy.
Got it.
When you felt like the sharks were gobbling you up, you didn't want to go play. And same thing with poker. I mean, you go to 1-2 limit games now, which is an intro limit, and you got these wannabe wise guys or wannabe, you know, professional poker players with their hat backwards and their little Ray-Bans, and they're screaming about someone making a call. It's like you got to make it enjoyable. I can remember, 20-second story, I was playing a 2-5-10, so this was a big game. This was even more than a 5-10 game, 10 on the straddle at Suncoast, and there was like six guys in the game better than me, and there were two guys worse. But the two guys worse were losing a lot of money, so I was going every Monday night for a while, and I was winning. And these clearly better players than me, guys that spent 50, 60 hours a week at it, were like saying, oh, you got lucky there. I look at him and go, don't you know you want to make me comfortable in this game? that I'm the one you won in the game? And it's like, no, but their ego is so big that it's more important to point out. They didn't know who I was, so it wasn't like, oh, that's RJ Bell. It was so important to point out, oh, you're wrong and I was right, even though you're raking the pot, instead of thinking, well, let's think long term and keep this guy in the game. Personally, when someone was bad in my games, I was getting them drinks.
And you had the right attitude, as opposed to the condescending, nice hand, sir.
Yeah, well, that's why poker is pretty much dead if you want to be a pro, unless you're at the very top of the mountain. When we come back, we do it every day. Whatever games matter on TV tonight, we tell you what you need to know.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox, and this is the pregame show you've always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
I'm RJ Bell. We are Straight Outta Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. We've got one game in the NBA playoffs coming up later on. It tips off a little over an hour from now, 8 Eastern time on ESPN. It is Game 3 in a series tied at 1 apiece between the Raptors and the 76ers. And right now on pregame.com, Toronto is a 1.5-point favorite on the road.
And I want this to be a jam-packed segment, so I'm going to open a Coke Zero and drink it during this segment, Fez.
Living on the wild side.
Go, baby.
We're going to lean to Toronto here, minus the 1.5. Now, Toronto favored on the road, and it's all about concerns with Embiid. Talk about load management. Embiid in the playoffs against Brooklyn, he only played 4 of the 5 games. He took game 3 off. He only played 1 game more than 30 minutes. Didn't have to against Brooklyn. Add up all his minutes, less than 100 minutes for Embiid. Well, now they need him against Toronto. Embiid played 30 minutes on Saturday, 32 minutes on Monday, and let's face it, he looked like a shell of his normal self.
All right, so let's confirm that, because if you go back to the prior series against Brooklyn, it was he took off the game, he played 33 or so minutes. Then in the last game of the series, Embiid played like 20, but they were winning so handedly he was unneeded. So the theory was he was moving towards 30-plus. The fact he's playing 30-plus in game 1 and 2 seems to have the trend line, you know, it's following the trend line, but you're saying the eye test is not the same player.
Yeah, the eye test said he was absolutely not himself when he had to play in game 2, those 30-plus minutes. He only got 2 baskets, RJ, and I got to tell you, I've never seen a 7-footer built like Embiid spend so much time on the ground, flopping and falling down from any kind of incidental contact. So I'm going to lean Toronto minus 1.5 here.
All right, so let's think about this line, all right? Is Toronto, let's just call it 4 for home court with such good teams. So this is saying the fact Philly's only 1.5 is Toronto's 2.5 points better.
No, it's saying that Toronto here is the favorite. Toronto's laying the 1.5. It opened Toronto plus 1.5.
Okay. So, yes. Wow. So what we're saying is it's saying it's 4-5.5 points different.
And that's why this is only a lean, RJ, because...
But why? I mean, what's driving that?
I have to feel...
Because under that theory, the line in Toronto would be like 9.5,
exactly.
Right?
And what's driving it, I really feel that Embiid is not going to be right for tonight's game.
But did we think Embiid, after watching game one, did you think Embiid was going to be right in game two?
No. Remember, he had that gastrointestinal problem as well.
So what's changed? I mean, it seems like there's some revelation now. Oh, Embiid's limited. We got to move this line. Well, why wasn't game two moved then?
Because it was a must-win for Philly down 0-1 with the zigzag, and now the feeling is, Philly's even the series up, and it's Toronto that's going to be bringing it game three.
Well, I kind of like Philly. How did Philly, 30 seconds, how did Philly win that game two?
Well, they won the rebounding by about 20, so they just out-physicaled Toronto, and Toronto's bench was a no-show, including Van Vliet, who bageled and did not score a point.
I got to be honest, Jonas. This feels like one of those things that directionally it makes sense that Embiid not playing as well is meaningful, but it feels like it's overdone. I'm going to do a last-minute pick, take the value. I got the home dog with the Sixers. Gimme RJ's bet.
The Odd Couple is coming up next here on Fox Sports Radio. We are straight out of Vegas. Back tomorrow, 6 Eastern time, 3 o'clock Pacific, right here on FSR and the iHeartRadio app.
Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.